When Edward Snowden first reached out to journalist Glenn Greenwald, Greenwald ignored his emails, so Snowden turned to documentary filmmaker Laura Poitras. Some of their exchange reads like a spy thriller. For example, he warned Poitras about creating a password that would be nearly impossible to hack. Assume that your adversary is capable of a trillion guesses per second. Little did Poitras know that that encrypted email from him would lead to one of the biggest exposés of the U.S. government and may well define the rest of her life. Journalist Peter Moss recently met with Laura Poitras at the home in Brazil of journalist Glenn Greenwald. Moss profiles Poitras for the New York Times Magazine. So set the scene for us when you met Laura. Tell us about that first meeting in Brazil with her and Glenn Greenwald.
It was a very unusual location because Glenn Greenwald lives in Rio to begin with, which is unusual for an American journalist who's breaking such big news. And he lives in a kind of remote part of Rio, really on the edge of the jungle, in a house where there are monkeys swinging around, there are banana trees. He's got 10 dogs, one cat. And he sits on a porch in his house in flip-flops and surf shorts with his computer and just writes away. And I went there and Laura was there. She's at her computer. She had several computers, one for editing, one for communicating, and one that's air-gapped, which means that it's never been connected to the internet. So that's the one that she views her sensitive documents on. That's where they were working from, in this kind of crazy house in the jungle where the electricity went off occasionally. The water went off when I was there. You know, dishes are piled in the sink because nobody really has a lot of time to take care of those sorts of things. And this is where it was all happening.
So the portrait you paint, Peter, of Laura Poitras is that of a pretty intense individual. What was she like in person?
She is a very intense person. She is at the same time a very kind of fades into the background type of person. As a filmmaker, she really kind of tries to, you know, not be the center of attention, not like, you know, hey, this is my camera, I'm the filmmaker, do what I want, but really just blend in. Her toughness is kind of exhibited mostly in firm quiet rather than aggressive language or behavior.
Do you think that toughness, that Laura's toughness, is essentially what led her to this story? I mean, why did Snowden choose her?
One of the great ironies of this whole story is that it is because Laura Poitras was under surveillance from the United States government that Snowden chose her. And he chose her not because specifically she had been under surveillance, but because having been under surveillance, she had had to kind of begin to live a semi-encrypted life. And so she was able to correspond in an encrypted way with anybody. And Snowden became aware of that. And that's why he was able to begin this dialogue with her and bring in Glenn Greenwald shortly afterwards, who he had tried to reach out to, but who didn't have encryption software, didn't know how to communicate in an encrypted way.
As you describe it, Peter, there's a lot of cloak and dagger communication leading up to the meeting in Hong Kong. But when they arrive, it really starts to feel like fiction, from meeting the contact at the Hong Kong Mall, who turns out to be Snowden, who was carrying a Rubik's Cube to identify himself, to they're taking the batteries out of their phones and sticking the phones in the fridge for privacy. What precautions did you have to take in your conversations with Poitras?
You know, the way that these conversations went, there are just some topics that Laura and Glenn could not talk to me about. How they communicated and when the documents were exchanged, these sorts of things, they wouldn't really talk to me about because they didn't want to provide information that the government might use to prosecute them and also to prosecute Edward Snowden.
No, you didn't meet Snowden, but you were able to access an interview with him through Laura Poitras, an encrypted Q&A. And the final question you asked Snowden was whether he was surprised that Poitras immediately started filming when they met in his hotel room in Hong Kong. And his answer kind of intrigued me. He says, as one might imagine, normally spies allergically avoid contact with reporters or media. So I was a virgin source. Everything was a surprise. And his use of the word spy, how did Snowden see himself?
You know, I can't really speak to that because the questions I asked him that he responded to were really about his work with Glenn and Laura. You know, the one thing that I would say, though, that really was among the many interesting things that he said in that interview was that one of the reasons he came to trust Laura as much as he did was because in their initial exchanges, she was more paranoid of him than he was of her. And he himself, as he said in this Q&A, is famously paranoid. You know, she was more careful, I think, in getting involved in this correspondence and exchange of documents and information with Snowden than even Snowden himself was.
Where does Laura see this story going and taking her along with it?
she's very open about what her beliefs are. You know, she doesn't kind of hide behind the, oh, I'm a journalist, I don't have any opinions kind of dogma. She's in yet another ironic position. You know, the first irony in a sense is that because she was under surveillance, Snowden sought her out and she had the skills to communicate with him. She defends her privacy as much as she can. She doesn't like to talk about, you know, her personal life at all, her background, anything of that sort. And the irony is that because she has become involved now with Snowden, she's not going to be able to have probably much of a private life for the rest of her life. They have thousands of classified and top secret NSA documents, and they've only published a very small number of them so far, actually.
Do they want to publish more?
They're planning to publish more. They're very clear about that. What that means, however, is that, you know, they're going to be holding on to these documents for the rest of their lives, I suppose. And so they're going to have to keep these secrets. As much as they're exposing, they're also keeping secrets, and they're going to have to keep them for a long time. And that's not necessarily a comfortable position to be in.
Do you think journalists can remain impartial about the story? I mean, you've essentially just told the facts in the Laura Poitras profile as you know them, but you know what's at stake with privacy and democracy. Have you managed to remain impartial?
No, but I think the question is based on this idea that journalists can be impartial on anything. I don't see how an individual who has a particular cultural, political, economic, social background can be impartial on anything. We are kind of formed by and victims of our upbringing, of what race we are, what class we are, what gender we are. So I don't think on any issue, really, there's impartiality. There's an attempt to be fair. There's an attempt to be rigorous. There's an attempt to be critical in your thinking. But impartial, do I have opinions on this? Yes, I do. I think it's a real problem. I think that there's a problem in our democracy when our government is able to look at all of our correspondence and all of our movements. I think it has an effect, even if we're not aware of it.
Journalist Peter Moss, you can read his profile of Laura Poitras in the New York Times. We'll have a link at theworld.org. Peter, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Marco.